I'd like to ask you about, you know, because there's a lot of guys that, I mean, you know, most of the people that listen to Draw My Successor are, by and large, mostly freelancers and working for themselves. But there's a lot of, there's quite a few storyboard artists that, you know, or people that are into storyboard that, listen to the show as well. And I think we covered a lot of this when we spoke to Mark Simon. But, you know, from your perspective, people breaking into the field or wanting to break into the field, what are the strengths that you feel they need to have aside from their portfolio, obviously, or maybe what type of things need to be reflected in their portfolios in order to be able to get a gig like this?
There's two pretty big different questions, but I'll tackle the portfolio question first. You certainly, one of the things is for storyboarding in particular, you know, it's visual storytelling is the key. And so there's a lot of people that have done a lot of comic work, whether it's comic books or comic strips. Those are great for a storyboarding portfolio because you can really see if the person could just tell a story, you know, clearly, that you can really read what's happening just by flipping through it really quickly, that whether the drawings are appealing or not. So there's some very basic things like just clear communication. You know, again, if you look at a Jack Kirby page of comic books, for example, it's quite amazing to see that you can read those pages from across the room. Everything is very, very clear and easy to understand very quickly. Whereas a lot of modern comic books that are drawn with 10,000 lines and are colored really dark and murky, you know, you can't even see what's going on from at arm's length. So that's what I mean by readability. So things that just read really clear, pop off the page. And then storytelling, the way you can evaluate that yourself is, can I read my comics without reading the words? That's sort of the acid test, especially because the people that will be looking at your portfolio, chances are they're not going to be reading the words in your storyboard samples or in your comic book samples, because they're just flipping through a bunch of books and they want to know, can you tell a story visually independent of the words? And then if they like your sample, they'll go back and they'll read more carefully. But if I see a storyboard sample, if I can tell what's going on and I have to, you know, really dig deep to decipher it, well, I know right away that person is, you know, they may have potential, but they're not somebody that we can use right away. I often describe to people what studios are really looking for is someone that can make money for them. I mean, they're not hiring you out of the goodness of their heart. They hire a person because they think, hey, you can help us make money for our studio. So you need to demonstrate as an artist that you can hit the ground running right away and do the job that they need to be done, and not need a lot of hand-holding. And that those days, let's say, of having an apprenticeship or being able to rise through the ranks from being a cell cleaner, you know, to an assistant and all those things, unfortunately, there isn't that big infrastructure in animation studios anymore. But again, to portfolio, comic books and comic strips are great, but you still need to have a storyboard sample. You have to be able to show that you can work in that format. And this is where a lot of people just flatly, they'll throw up their arms and they'll like, well, I don't have a storyboard sample. I don't know how to do storyboards. But the fact is there are tons of storyboards available online. There's a lot of storyboard artists that post their work where you can really see, hey, what does an animation storyboard look like? And people will often say, well, okay, but I could draw a storyboard, but I need a story. I don't have a story to draw. I don't have a writer that I work with, and I don't write. And again, I recommend to people there, you can use a script that's online from a movie to do a scene. Or better yet, what I find is helpful is that there's tons of public domain comic books that people have posted online in various forums and blogs, and they're really not that difficult to find. And you can take a story like that and adapt it into a story for your storyboard portfolio. Typically, you know, 15 to 20 pages of a three-panel sample, you know, is going to be enough to tell somebody if you could handle the job.
So you also you do a little bit of teaching, and or I should say you have some DVDs that you help people understand about how to create storyboards and stuff like that. Could you talk a little bit about those?
Sure, and I'd like to give a little backdrop on that too. Is that you know, a few years ago when I was on the SpongeBob show and again working as storyboard supervisor, part of my work, because we were working with less experienced storyboard artists are working, those are the ones that are the storyboard revisionists. So part of my job was to teach them more and more to help them build up their skills as a storyboard artist so that they could, you know, continue to help us finish those storyboards that needed work. So I was building up a big stack of teaching material, and at one point I just thought, wow, this is really great. I should write a book, which really was quite presumptuous of me at the time, because I'm like, oh, I've only been doing this for, you know, 5 or 6 years, but I still felt that I had enough material to do a book. Now, this is in like 2001 or so, and it was really before I was thinking about the internet. And so I really wanted to get into self-publishing, you know, put out my own book, but that also fell by the wayside over the years. So then when YouTube came around, it was like, oh, this is great. I could make little tutorials that are like 3 minutes long. And that's a very doable task instead of trying to, you know, write an entire book. It's a lot easier to make a 3-minute YouTube video. And, you know, you don't want to sabotage yourself by taking on a huge project all at once. So I started making some YouTube videos, tutorials about drawing with Illustrator, anything that was exciting to me at the time. And I gradually started making tutorials about storyboarding. I taught a class locally that was videotaped, and I put some of those videotapes online. And as those grew, as those got more viewers and more questions, more interest, I decided that I would do a do an entire online class. So last summer, I created a 10-week online class in trying to teach storyboarding from the ground up the way I would have wanted to be taught when I started, because it's a skill that is hard to pick up from a book. It's very nice when you have the opportunity to learn it with other people that can give you feedback who are very experienced. So last summer, I did a 10-week class. I had about 18 students where each week learned a new lesson and got to interact with the students on a blog online where I posted the videos every week. And eventually, when I finished the class, I realized that I could take all of those videos and make them available on DVDs, so that I had learned quite a bit about using programs like Sony Vegas and their DVD creator. But I basically used all off-the-counter, off-the-shelf materials to turn 10 weeks worth of lessons into 10 DVDs. And so I created a product called Storyboard Secrets, and it's about 13 hours of lessons that take you from, you know, zero to coming up with ideas through roughing and thumbnailing and pitching all the way until the entire process is finished with revisions and even a little bit about the newly emerging digital storyboarding formats.
That's fantastic. I think the first place I saw your storyboard tips was probably on DeviantArt. It had done a bunch with some SpongeBob drawings, and there were little tips about, you know, good poses versus bad poses, that kind of thing.
Yeah, this is a great... I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things I've learned from some very good teachers about... marketing your work, for example, is that they call it leveraging, whereas if you create something, you know, continue to use that over the years in different venues so that you're not constantly having to create new work. A lot of times you can take work that you've already done and you have a new audience. So to them, Everything's new, everything's fresh. So those SpongeBob tip sheets and tutorials about good storytelling, I created those during my time on SpongeBob to teach a class for the storyboard artists that were on our crew. Because even now at Fishhooks, it's very helpful and very energizing to a crew to always be not only challenged, but to have their creativity kind of like stoked. Like, let's say, someone will share an idea with them, other people can share back. So putting those on DeviantArt was just very exciting to see a lot of people who hadn't seen them before get a lot of help out of them. The comments from those really, really make my day when people will say, oh my gosh, you know, this really, really helped me. And again, it's that sort of thing that gave me the courage to put out more videos. You know, I think we all, to one degree or another, are pretty insecure about ourselves and about our work. And I know there have been many times when I ask myself, it's like, well, who the hell are you to teach somebody else? You know, you barely know what you're doing. We all kind of feel that inside. But getting some good feedback on a venue like DeviantArt can really be encouraging. And then you realize, gee, you know, I'm actually being able to help other people. And it's nice to be able to make some money or get some publicity as you're doing the same thing. It's literally a win-win situation.
You know, what I like about what you're doing with this is that, you know, and I think we talked about this before, and when I first found out that you were doing this, I was really excited, because, I mean, on Drawn by Success, we like to talk about different ways that artists can kind of expand and kind of think about what they do and what their skill sets and what their experience, what all they bring to the table, how they can look at those things a little differently beyond the traditional model of doing illustration or doing it is, you know, what it is that you do. And what I really like about what you're doing is that you're leveraging your experience and knowledge in a whole new direction. First of all, you know, you're helping other people that need the information. Obviously, the information is something that people need, right? It's going to be helping them in their careers. And, you know, beyond that, as an artist yourself, it's helping to secure your future in a sense. I mean, it's leveraging what you do. And this is something that you don't have to be sitting there repeatedly, you know, doing, like, you know, like for a lot of us illustrators, I mean, we're having to sit behind a drawing table, you know, pumping out stuff all the time, grinding the work out in order to be able to make a living. You know, I see this, what you're doing is comparable to licensing your images, where you know, you've done the image and now you're able to capitalize on it and leverage the income on that image. And here what you're doing is you're leveraging your knowledge and experience. You know, and I think it's a really, really good model for other people to look at and realize that, you know, a lot of us have this knowledge, you know, a certain amount of knowledge. And you don't have to be the greatest at it, because there's always going to be someone that you know more, you know, more than on, you know, a certain level. I mean, I heard a mentor of mine say once that, you know, because, you know, getting back to what you were saying about not feeling like, you know, who are you to be able to bring this to market? You're right. We all feel that way. But, you know, I had a mentor of mine tell me that, you know, to every second grader, you know, the third grader is a god, you know, so, you know, so you're always ahead of somebody. You don't have to be the best at what you're doing, but there's always people that you can turn around and help in your journey. And I think that's great that you know what you're doing with this.
I want to stress too that you know, I don't have any particularly special skills. When people look, for example, they look at my product and it comes in a nice big box, and people would ask like, "Oh my gosh, you know, how did you get this printed? How did you do that?" And it's like, okay, well, I ordered the boxes from Uline, which is this big giant company that sells boxes, plain white boxes. And I went to a color copy place with some sticker stock in my hand. and you know, they printed my labels for me. And we on our kitchen table is where I have a paper cutter, and I peel the stickers off and I put them on the boxes, and they look really nice. But the thing is I don't have any special skills, but I guess I just was crazy enough to think that I could pull that off. And so I just want to encourage people that the same thing when it comes to blogging or creating a website. You know, I didn't know anything about that. I just went to blogger.com and started my first blog. And my audience was about 7 people a day after about a year. But I just kept doing it. And eventually, because I was sharing something of myself or doing a tutorial or you know, giving some person a reason to come back, then eventually word grew. And it is gradual. But if you just keep chipping away at it, it feeds your credibility. People understand, oh, this person's real, they're not a fly by night, and they've built a sort of relationship with you too. So I encourage people that even just starting with a simple blog about their work can be something that gradually will snowball into something bigger that will give you more name recognition. Actually, you know what? Do we have an extra 5 minutes for me to tell a very compelling story?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Please do, yeah.
I think that this is a really huge story. There was, I'm on Twitter, and I'll experiment with a bunch of different kinds of social media, but primarily I use Twitter and Facebook a few times a day to keep things alive with people that are online. And on Twitter one day, I saw a guy's little icon that just kind of had a really cool cartoon face on it. So I clicked on it. And on Twitter, you're allowed to put a link to your own website in your profile. So I clicked on this guy's link, and I was blown away. I mean, the artwork that this guy had was just stunning. It was cartoony, but it was also action-oriented. And I just thought it was fantastic. So I went back on Twitter, and I just said, hey, you guys got to check out this guy. And I gave his link, and that was the end of it. It was just sort of one of those things that I do when I see some cool art. I tweeted out the link and never thought about it again. Well, about 3 weeks later, the guy who I tweeted about sent me an email, and he's like, oh, man, I have to really thank you for helping me get that job. I really appreciate you talking to so-and-so about me, and I just started working on this project, and man, you really helped me out, and I just really appreciate it. And I'm kind of like, I didn't talk to anybody. But what I found out later was that somebody that I work with at the Disney studio follows my Twitter account. So they're one of my Twitter followers. They saw the link that I posted about this guy. They looked at his stuff because he had a lot of his stuff online on this blog. And then somebody contacted him and said, hey, we'd like you to do some freelance work on this development project that we have going on. So he assumed that I had talked to somebody, but I didn't. And I just have to stress from this that if you have your work, you just want to get it out there where people can see it, and you cannot anticipate what's going to happen of that. But you know, if you're not out there where people can see you, then I guarantee nothing's going to happen with your career. So wherever you are, whatever style that you draw in, the biggest thing is just to get your work, again, where people can see it and have the chance to contact you easily. And, you know, sometimes somebody likes your work, they want to hire you, and don't give them a chance to forget about you.
Yeah, you can't be shy. You can't be a wallflower. You got to get your stuff out there. You just never, yeah, like I said, you just never know where, you know, where things are going to turn up and where opportunities are going to, you know, make themselves available.
Yeah, I forgot when somebody said that it was that a quote about luck is where preparation meets opportunity.
Right.
So it's just that, you know, people think that other people are lucky, but it's like, well, the fact is, this person had a body of work and they prepared it and they put it online and they were prepared for someone to stumble across their work. So that's the hugest recommendation that I give to people. Oh, Carlos, for your audience, because you have so many cartoonists and illustrators, all kinds of different artists that will listen to this program, is that there are places in the animation field for illustrators and for painters. It's not just people that consider themselves cartoonists. All these shows need background art, which you know, a lot of really skilled painters do the work of background painting, and even if they're drawing in Illustrator, if they're, you know, actually painting with good old fashioned paint, there's a lot of people that, like, when I see that person that's on our staff, like, oh my gosh, this person actually paints like in these beautiful impressionistic styles, and that's what they're all about. But then they get a job in the animation field to, you know, to make their living while they can pursue their gallery work. They have the freedom to do that without having to worry about where their next paycheck is coming from.
Right.
So for illustrators of all stripes, there may be some good opportunities for you in the animation field. You just need to open your eyes to that and start looking at animated shows and looking at the more illustrative aspects of them and asking yourself, is that something I can do?
And then they have people who develop characters as well, character development, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
People that draw props and stuff. And
that is true. And one thing I try to stress to people that those positions are usually an entry-level position that somebody, except for the character. No, I should stress. The character designers are, you know, a whole area unto themselves, and those guys are fantastic. But the work is much harder to find because each production, while they may have 8 or 10 or 12 storyboard artists, will typically only have one or two character designers. And those guys are the best of the best. They really have a very good character designer will be, you know, somebody whose work will just make you gasp. Whereas storyboard artists, sometimes you have the opportunity to get a job like that a little bit easier than the more coveted visual development artist, because there's more of them and because the studios chew through them quicker.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I mean, that's an important piece of information. I think that, you know, a lot of our audience needs to know that there are other opportunities there other than just storyboarding for the studios.
Yeah. And frankly, before I got into the field, I had no intention of going into that field. I was only interested in doing comic books. So sometimes you just there are opportunities outside of what you're normally used to thinking about.
And you just have to keep plugging away. It's all action-based. I mean, the more you work, the more you're out there doing, the opportunities arise and they present themselves, and before you know it, you're moving in a different direction where you never even thought you might be going.
Absolutely. I mean, doing those black and white self-published comics in the early 90s and going to conventions, that, like I said, that made the big break for me. And so I just like to repeat that for people because... yeah, you just got to hustle, make sure people see your work. Yeah, it's got to be quality work, but you also, you know, just stay productive and keep working. You'll keep improving too.
Now, did you go to school for storyboarding or art? Or, I mean, what was your background? What was the training? What kind of investment did you make in yourself, you know, to improve yourself as an artist? I know you've taken, you know, from a business standpoint with the DVD stuff and, you know, your workshops, you've taken, you've studied marketing and, you know, to be able to get that off, you know, successfully.
Yeah.
What kind of background have you had? What kind of investment have you made in yourself, you know, to get to where you are?
Well, I did start out, you know, my training, I wasn't even aware in high school that there was a difference between artist and illustrator or an artist and a cartoonist. And so I originally went to college to be, you know, to go in as an art major. And I could tell my first semester that I wanted to run screaming out of all of those classes. I had nothing to do with the fine arts crowd. So I recalculated, and I went to the Joe Kubert School of Cartoon and Graphic Art in Dover, New Jersey. And this was way back from 1983 to 1985 is where I went to the Kubert School. And what's great about the Kubert School is it's taught by really old school cartoonists who have a very bottom line attitude of, like, if the stuff, your work has got to read really clearly because, you know, they were working in comic books printed on bad paper, and everything is all about the deadline. So they taught us right away that if you turn your work in late, you get an F. So that was a really huge training for me, was the Joe Kubert School. And I called Joe up finally after thinking about it for years and years. I called him up last year and I just told him, boy, thank you so much for providing such a great school, because I learned so much. And in retrospect, all the foundations I learned about cartooning and storytelling, I learned there. But then what's interesting is, even though I got a little bit of, right away after school, I went to try to get some work in comics, and I did go to an animation studio trying to get some work as a storyboard artist. I did prepare a storyboard sample, even though I had no training in it, and in storyboarding per se. But upon my first rejections, I stopped looking, and that's when I fell into a black hole for the next few years. And I lost a total of about 6 or 7 years through discouragement. I didn't enter the animation field until I was just on the brink of my 30th birthday, because every time I got a rejection at the beginning, I would stop looking, and I was very easily discouraged. But what would always happen after a couple of years, I would get so sick of working in a bookstore or doing the retail jobs that I was doing that the despair fueled me into trying again. And that's what happened in 1988. I brought my work to the San Diego Comic Book Convention, and just showing my portfolio around, I got a couple small freelance jobs working on the California Raisins comic book, among other things. And again, lost a bit more time there, but after 88, through discouragement, because like one person didn't pay me, other things were happening. And but again, I climbed back on the horse and started doing comic books in the early 90s. And so that's the schooling was the Joe Kubert School. But a lot of the dues, I would say, the investment was in just working on things that maybe didn't promise a lot of return. I did illustrations for a local magazine that paid $10 per illustration, and just gradually built up that portfolio. And in terms of marketing, you know, the things that I've learned that allowed me to sell things online, I don't know, I came across a guy named Fred Gleek. His last name is G-L-E-E-C-K. And he's one of many, many people that, you know, teach how to get your work online and how to publicize it. And I think I heard him on a podcast once. And then a few months later, he had a class at the Learning Annex. And I started getting more and more interested. I took a class from someone online about how to make a website. It's hard for me to recall all the different steps because it was so gradual. But it's just that curiosity and just keep poking and keep learning about a little tidbit here and a little tidbit there. Like I mentioned, that idea of leveraging your work by, if you've done something in one field, you can reuse it by posting it on your blog or something else, and build up a gradual audience, build up a group of people that are interested in what you're doing, so that when you have something that you want to either sell or publicize, that you have a built-in audience that will respond to what you're doing, whether it's in buying something, watching your show, or reading your comic, all of those things.
So that's cool. You've come a long way, and you've got another special event coming up real soon too. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an evolution of the things that I've been working toward. I like to get people attracted to my blog, which is, by the way, at storyboardsecrets.com/blog. And sometimes things will just sort of plateau at a certain amount. I can post all the posts I want, but lately I haven't been really building an audience beyond about 250 visitors a day. And so I decided to learn about doing an online class that's live the ones that I did last summer, I recorded those on my computer and posted them to a blog like a YouTube video. So now I'm creating an event that is more interactive. I get a lot of emails, a lot of questions on my blog and on Twitter about storyboarding. And I thought, well, here's an opportunity to answer those questions, not only for those individual people, but again, leveraging so that a lot of people have the same questions. How do I get started? How do I, you know, pace a story so that it looks right? How do I even, what do I put in my portfolio? Those are very common questions. So on June 25th at 11 a.m. Pacific, I'm going to be having a live Q&A, live question and answer event all about storyboarding, where people can log on. Very easy to just log on from a link that I'll have on my blog. And a window pops open on your computer, and there'll be a live presentation where you can ask questions and get answers about anything that you're interested in terms of storyboarding. There'll be some questions that'll be harder to answer than others. Like sometimes people will say, oh, can you describe, you know, how, you know, what the entire process is from beginning to end? It's like, okay, well, that maybe is a bigger question than I can tackle in one class. But I'm trying out something new. I'd love to have people come out and ask their questions and, you know, learn some things and just have some fun.
Sure, do you have the link for that page yet?
Yeah, I am going to be posting a link very prominently at the top of my blog, which, again, you can find at storyboardsecrets.com/blog.
All right, so if we can get that maybe before we post this and before this goes live, we'll put it in our show notes and have people know. Will people have to register in that link?
They will, yes. They will click, and they'll basically, all they need to do is just put in their name and their email address, and then they will be notified when the event goes live, and they could just click right in to the event.
Now, so, is there a limited amount of space, a limited amount of callers that'll be able to that you'll have this available for? I mean, I know some systems can operate with 100 people, 250 people. Is there a limit?
That is a very good question. This is the first time, again, I'll be using it, but the system that I'm using and the account that I have allows for up to 100 people on the call.
All right. So if you want to get on there, you need to register. And, you know, otherwise you're not going to get your spot.
Yeah, I'm very pleased. I was able, you know, I basically put out the link to people that are already on my mailing list. And I was very pleased to see I've gotten about 48 signups so far. So I definitely want to have as many people as possible, because it's going to make it more interesting to find out what are the most popular topics.
Right, so half the spots are already gone. You better hurry up, folks.
Yes, if you're listening to this, you need to, you know, go to that link with, you know, down in the show notes. Go check it out. Register. Half the spots are already gone.
There'll be two more taken up by the time this podcast is over, right?
Oh, excellent. Yes. Looking forward to having you there.
Maybe me and Bob will share a line, and that way we can spare up one extra line.
Okay, no, that's fine.
We'll listen in. Yeah, Carlos can hold the receiver, and I'll listen in.
Excellent. Well, Sherm, I want to thank you for coming on. I've been dying to talk to you for a while, and it's been a pleasure, and I love hearing your story, and I love that you're doing all these great, innovative things with your knowledge and experience and helping people along the way. So I want to thank you for coming on.
Well, it's been a great pleasure, and I want to thank you guys for having this show. And again, I think anything we can do to encourage artists, because a lot of us, we work in a solitary medium. A lot of us, we're all by ourselves in our studio working. And I mean, that's certainly before I was in the animation studios, I was, you know, freelancing at home all by myself. So having these podcasts is a great help. So I thank you for that too.
Excellent. Bob, any last words?
Yeah, hey, thanks for coming on, Sherm. I enjoyed talking to you. That was really great.
Good to meet you, Bob.
You too.
All right, guys, that concludes today's episode of DrawnBySuccess.com with storyboard artist extraordinaire Sherm Cohen and my partner Bob Ostrom. Until next time, This has been Drawn by Success.com.
This is where you're supposed to put on the radio voice, Carlos.
Well, that was it.
It was good, though.
maybe I need to add a Spanish accent.
Yeah, thank you.